When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. John Pollock and Wei Ting coming moments after the final three-hour Raw, at least for the rest of the year.
It's that soon. Okay. I wasn't expecting it to be next week. Wow. Okay. I got to make my plans.
What are we doing next Monday night after we finish recording?
I think I'm going to go to bed an hour earlier.
We're wrapping up the show by this time next week.
Unlikely, but I mean, sure, it's possible.
I'm coming over right afterwards. We're going to go into your backyard.
You're free to hang out there if you want. I'm going to bed.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll, okay. Well, on that note, I'm excited about next Monday. I'm not going to sugarcoat things. Welcome to the program. We have Raw to talk about tonight. Where were they tonight? Evansville, Indiana.
Yes.
Never been.
No, you don't often hear about Evansville, Indiana, really for any reason other than the occasional pro wrestling show.
Yes. We're going to talk about the last Monster Standing match, the return of Seth Rollins, plenty to discuss. But we're going to start off the top. There were actually two very significant athlete passings today. We had Dikembe Mutombo died. Did you see this?
I saw.
58. Very sad. Did not know he had been suffering from brain cancer. He was one of my favorite players in the mid-90s. I mean, when we would play basketball and the goal was always to just get a big block and everyone would just like do the Dikembe Mutombo with the finger when they would someone. And that was the guy. He was one of my favorite players. I always thought he was just 7'2". This guy played 18 seasons in the NBA. It's incredible.
18. Wow.
He was playing all the way up until the end of the last decade. Like, I didn't realize his career went that late for, like, a big center. I mean, tremendous player. And then you have Pete Rose, who, of course, more connections to professional wrestling and even got the mention on Raw tonight, dying at the age of 83, lived a very complicated life. And I'm really interested to see sort of the fallout this week of how his legacy is going to be assessed by Major League Baseball. Like this, like famously, like banned from Major League Baseball over his gambling, his series of gambling incidents, including on his own team of the Cincinnati Reds. And he basically had this campaign for the rest of his life to try and be reinstated by baseball and was constantly like he would make slow inroads, but it was just this game of how forthright he was going to be. And it's funny because I had just watched HBO just put out a documentary on him not all that long ago. There's also this brand new book out on Pete Rose that I've heard is phenomenal, but I have it was on my list actually to read. I haven't read it yet, but part of it was like this. He wanted to be able to go into the Hall of Fame before he died. Now he has died, and it will be interesting if that is now revisited, if he can at least get his name on the ballot. Because I think in the wake of his death, there's going to be you can just see the coverage tonight. Like there's going to be a lot of people in baseball, I think, pushing for him to be on the ballot. Like this is like clearly like one of, and for some, the best Major League Baseball player in history.
Do you have an opinion?
I mean, I don't have a dog in the race on this. My thought on whenever it has come to the Pete Rose controversy, and listen, there are controversies in his life that you can certainly have the discussion about. My thought has always been, well, if he should be in the Hall of Fame or not in the Hall of Fame, put his name on the ballot. Let the voters decide if he should be going into the Hall of Fame or not. Like, who is Major League Baseball to, like, the Hall of Fame is not run by Major League Baseball, but to me it is. His name should be on the ballot, and if he doesn't have the support, he doesn't have the support. But I think that at this period, after all these decades, like, put his name on the ballot, and those will either, they'll either support him or they won't support him. But I think you have to put that confidence in your voting panel.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Of course, the wrestling tie-ins were much lesser, but did that, you know, pretty famous appearance at WrestleMania 14 in Boston, where he comes out and you're just expecting the typical celebrity tie-in, which were usually, you know, the WrestleMania celebrity appearances were pretty much, you knew what you were getting. And here this guy comes out and does this huge heel promo, and he's inciting the Boston fans and bringing up Bill Buckner. I mean, it was a great promo. And the big spot is that Kane comes out as a heel, mind you, and Tombstone's Pete Rose, and then they just continued it for the next two successive WrestleManias. And then as a publicity stunt at WrestleMania 20, they inducted him into their own Hall of Fame to And that was enough that, like, Bob Backlund did not want to go into the Hall of Fame that year because of that. He thought it was so disrespectful. And beyond that, he guest hosted a Raw, and that's about what was his pro wrestling career. But, I mean, the times we would go to Vegas to cover fights, like, I'd always see him there, like, signing away in the mall. Like, that was where he just set up shop, and you could always just walk by. He was just sitting around. It's not like he was flanked by a ton of people. Like, if you ever want to go up and get a Pete Rose autograph in Vegas, not hard to interact with the man or find him. But I would recommend the HBO documentary that they did on him. I think it came out just a couple of months ago, because I did watch that. I think it's a two-parter. It's really well done, and it made me want to read this book that came out. But there you go. That was Pete Rose and Dikembe Mutombo passing away. Very scary story that was reported by Fightful today, and that involves AEW wrestler Killswitch. And he was rushed to the hospital on Friday and was diagnosed with pneumonia in both lungs. It says here from the story here that Jack Wannan put up on the site that he was rushed to the hospital by his wife on Friday after he was reportedly found collapsed at the hospital. Killswitch's blood oxygen level was below 80%, and doctors said he had pneumonia in both of his lungs. Fightful reported that he was, quote, days away from suffering permanent lung damage. Killswitch is reportedly expected to recover within a month's time. However, it's unknown how long it will be until he will return to AEW programming. So it sounds like, at least timing-wise, they at least got this taken care of before it became even worse, but that's a pretty scary situation. So the best wishes to Killswitch and making as quick a recovery as possible. Like, that's a scary one.
Sounds incredibly serious and mysterious, I guess. I don't know how much they might know about, you know, the cause of something like this, but never a good sign when, you know, a life-threatening thing just suddenly happens to you. So it sounds like this was a, you know, a tragedy avoided. So yeah, all the best to him and his recovery. I wonder what Christian is going to say about this.
I would hope that this is not fodder. Well,
this would be too far. Are you kidding me? Have you heard these Christian promos? This is almost like, you know, it's something you expect the character to make mention of.
What's he's going to call him up and say, okay, just before I do this promo, you're going to make a full recovery, right? So this is
you'd hope so. Yeah.
TNA, they have gone through a crazy weekend where they have to do their television tapings for the next month leading up to Bound for Glory. So as we had stated on Rewind to SmackDown, they were scheduled for Friday and Saturday, but due to Hurricane Helene, they had to move them to Sunday and Monday. Then those tapings had to be canceled. Now they are set to run on Wednesday and Thursday this week, but they're going to Skyway Studios because with the hurricane, you cannot do anything right now in Spartanburg. So they're going to do it at Skyway Studios, which is where they did all their tapings during the pandemic. And they're pricing tickets all at $10. And they're going to, all the proceeds will go to the hurricane relief efforts in Spartanburg. But they have four shows to tape leading into Bound for Glory, which is October 26th. So it's pretty important that they get these tapings done for their next pay-per-view, or, you know, just to tape some stuff. So, yeah, it just seems like they have had a rough go this weekend, but they're going to hopefully get these four episodes taped later on this week.
Giving all the proceeds to relief for victims, I think, is a really, really classy and smart move, you know, for TNA. Like, we're talking about a TNA that I think is enjoying great results out of this relationship with WWE. And I think we could at this point safely say, like, they've weathered the storm of negativity from the Scott D'Amore exit really well. You might even argue that, like, TNA,
they're on a bit of a hot streak, like, with what they just drew in San Antonio. Like, they did 2,000 people for Victory Road a few weeks ago.
You might even argue, like, of the Anthem era, like, maybe, I don't know, sort of approval rate for the company might be stronger than ever. So, you know, this was, I think, a great gesture for, you know, a really unfortunate set of circumstances. But, I mean, you see something like this and you can't really help but cheer for this group to, you know, continue to put on the shows that they set out to, and for a lot of the talents to succeed.
They're going to be doing Nick Nemeth and Joe Hendry as the main event for Bound for Glory. Do you see this as the timing to just coronate Joe Hendry?
I do, yeah. I would have even said that months ago, but now, especially, I wonder if there's added attention to, you know, the set of current tapings, but I would definitely do my best to try to, you know, use a lot of the positive momentum to your benefit.
New Japan ran its Destruction card in Kobe, which we have a review on the site from Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord for members of the Post Wrestling Cafe. In the main event, Tetsuya Naito did keep the IWGP World Heavyweight title, so it is official now for King of Pro Wrestling, October 14th, Naito defending the championship against Zack Sabre Jr., and if Sabre wins, his first title defense will be the next weekend against Sonata at Royal Quest 4. So I think that this main event, it has a lot of big focus on it. And of course, King of Pro Wrestling taking place at Sumo Hall, which will be Zack Sabre Jr.'s latest match at Sumo Hall. Do you remember his first match at Sumo Hallway, which was back at Sakura Genesis 2017, which we're going to be reviewing on Thursday?
I did not remember it because I have not started the show yet. But okay, well, thank you for the reminder.
Later this week, we'll plug everything at the end here. But the card for King of Pro Wrestling, they've released the entire lineup. David Finlay defending the global heavyweight title against Hirooki Goto. Doki defending the junior heavyweight title against Sho. Hiroshi Tanahashi will celebrate his 25th anniversary. Do you know that Tanahashi made his debut the same day that us in Canada and the U.S. were sitting down to watch Heroes of Wrestling? That's what Japan was producing. Hiroshi Tanahashi on the same day.
What a historical day in pro wrestling.
October 10th, 1999. It gave us plenty. Well, his 25th anniversary match, he will team with Shota Umino and El Fantasmo against the House of Torture. Happy 25 years, Mr. Tanahashi. Then a three-way match for the television title. Jeff Cobb, Yota Tsuji, and Ren Narita. Shingo Takagi defending the NEVER Openweight title against the newest member of TMDK, Ryohei Oiwa. And TMDK Shane Haste and Mikey Nichols will defend the tag titles against Bad Luck Fale and Caveman Ugg. The Bullet Club War Dogs of Clark Connors and Drillo Maloney defend the junior heavyweight tag titles against Kevin Knight and Kushida. And Hiromu Takahashi taking on Mystico.
Mm-hmm. That sounds
fun. This is a very good lineup for 2 weeks' time.
I'm interested in the main event purely for the result, and I think to see like what sort of match Zach can get out of Tetsuya Naito. I'm interested in Hiromu versus Mystico, and I'm interested to hear what Karen and Bruce will recommend out of the rest of the card.
All right, that's coming up October 14th on New Japan World. SmackDown ratings from Friday night, week number 3 on the USA Network. They did 1,568,000 viewers and a 0.45 in the demo. So they were up 5% in viewership, and the demo audience was basically identical to the last week. This was second on all of television Friday night, only behind the Miami-Virginia Tech game that ESPN aired, meaning that SmackDown beat all broadcast, including Fox, with their college game between Rutgers and Washington. So maybe this week way will we get the SmackDown graphic that is put out as we get this subtle battle of PR teams between Fox and WWE.
Care to explain what's happened since? Will you even attempt?
Well, after SmackDown had left and they had placed college football, and their first 2 weeks they did really, really well. And Fox, the first week, put out this graphic promoting the fact that this was their biggest Friday night in, I think, since like April, since the WrestleMania weekend, I believe it was. So they never knocked WWE by stating that, but the implication was certainly there. Like, look how great we have done post WWE on our Friday nights. And these football games have been doing very well for them, but on this particular Friday night, it was SmackDown on cable, no less, beating out the college game on Fox. So,
and what did WWE do to publicize that?
WWE?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I guess something's out there about the Fast Nationals.
Oh, okay, right. I don't even pay attention to these Fast National stories. I think everyone knows what the game is on certain weekends like this that are advantageous for WWE. Magically, these Fast Nationals fall out of the sky and they land on certain people's laps and they get reported. And I don't ever report Fast National numbers because I think they're pointless. But we do have the final numbers, and I think that we can gauge, and you can absolutely look at the final numbers here. And USA from 8 till 10 with SmackDown was ahead of Fox's Friday night programming on broadcast. So they have something to, they can absolutely claim a victory over Fox from this past Friday.
All right. What do we call these? The Friday Night Wars?
I don't know if we're at war level yet between football and SmackDown. We're certainly not at a cut eye between SmackDown and Rampage, because Rampage did 276,000 viewers and a 0.08. Last Friday was a tremendous number by Rampage standards, one of their biggest in months. But this week, down 16% in viewers, down 34% in the demo, 15th among primetime cable programs for this taped edition of Rampage. So kind of back to normal levels for Rampage after last week got this this big boost for whatever reason. And our final topic, the next two nights, two very big shows, starting with the NXT debut on CW, which will see Ethan Page against Trick Williams for the NXT title, CM Punk as referee. Roxanne Perez defending the women's title against Julia, which will open the show. Zachary Wentz and Wesley in a street fight. Jada Parker and Lola Vice against two members of Fatal Influence. And Oba Femi and Tony D'Angelo signing the contract on Miz TV. So I think that this is probably going to be on the higher end of what NXT is going to do on CW. This might even be they might set the bar that it will take them a long time to eclipse this. You've got Punk on this show. It's been a very well-promoted show. And I think the very easy prediction is that NXT is going to be the highest-rated programming on CW on a consistent weekly basis, because they're coming in at a time when, I mean, even just the rate that they were drawing on Tuesdays on USA, you transfer that over to CW. I mean, this is going to dramatically improve CW's primetime average with this show. So this should do very well on Tuesday night. They are going against the vice presidential debate, but as we mentioned, this is NXT, so I don't think that's going to have any effect. I don't think JD Vance or Tim Walls are going to be cutting into Oba Femi and Tony D'Angelo's contract signing.
Do you expect any title changes on the show?
I could see Trick getting his big title win with CM Punk there as the referee. You want the big kind of you want to have, I think, Punk in a, you know, kind of celebratory go home spot at the end of the night. Although would not surprise me if you see Drew show up on this show either in some form or fashion. It's kind of your last push for Hell in a Cell.
I could see that happening, but I also see the show ending with Trick Williams winning.
That would be my thought as well.
Julia versus Roxanne is starting the show, and I mean, I'm not maybe as expecting a title change there, although that's very possible too. You know, both titles could change, really. I mean, it's a fresh start. You want to like have some newsworthy event coming out of the show, but I guess if I had to pick between the two, I'm thinking Trick.
Mm-hmm. And they've pretty much outlined that Stephanie Valcour will be getting the winner of this. I mean, they've really positioned like their women's division to be a major focus. And they're teasing surprises for this show, too. So I think this is going to be a very newsworthy show on Tuesday night. And on Wednesday, AEW comes back with their fifth anniversary show. And as we're 48 hours out, we have three matches, the big one being Will Ospreay and Ricochet for the international title. Dr. Britt Baker against Serena Deeb in Baker's return, and Hangman Page versus Juice Robinson in Pittsburgh.
I mean, Ospreay Ricochet really is enough to sell the show, I would say, probably for most who care about maybe that rivalry and just even the buzz surrounding their first match. So, I mean, I expect plenty to be announced also ahead of the show, but Ospreay versus Ricochet is the big one.
Title change, title defense, or a draw?
Interesting. Can I see a title change? I mean, it's whatever, you know, boosts Ricochet's profile, and he doesn't necessarily have to win in order for his profile to be boosted. The match just has to live up to, like, very grandiose expectations at this point that we have. Honestly, I think anything's possible. Because, like, is Ospreay teasing any other programs so far outside of Ricochet?
Well, there's the Kyle Fletcher stuff that is sort of lingering after they lost the tag titles, and you had the disagreement right. over the screwdriver. So that's sort of hanging over. Some follow-up will come from that.
Yeah. And a title's not necessary, you know, for that particular feud. But, would you give Ricochet the championship? That's a good question. I guess I'm going to side on the on no, and maybe having him be crowned a little bit later on.
They've also got to get pretty much their pay-per-view lineup squared away, because we're less than 2 weeks from WrestleDream. You've got Danielson and Moxley as your headliner, and that's all we've got announced, I think, for this show so far.
Oh, they can announce a card pretty quickly, so I'm sure we'll get there soon.
Well, we will have up next coming your way on Tuesday night with Braden and Davey after the CW debut, and then Wednesday night, Wayne and I will be live moments after the fifth anniversary of Dynamite from Pittsburgh. Also, we are going to have Rewind Away coming out on Thursday, as we mentioned, Sakura Genesis, which is a match I've never gone back to watch for sanity. Kazuchika Okada against Katsuyori Shibata, a match that many have, you know, I think rightly stated, like, Shibata was having the match of his career. It's a sold out sumo hall. The atmosphere is incredible. And then, of course, is the headbutt that would end up derailing his career and his life, essentially. I mean, this was a near tragic end for Katsuyori Shibata from this particular spot. So we will be focusing on that and what else was going on with New Japan in April of 2017 when they were hitting on all cylinders in 2017. This is just a few months removed from the first Okada Omega match at Wrestle Kingdom. So we'll be talking about all things New Japan on this week's Rewind Away. That way still has to begin.
Yeah. Also, listen, John, I have the rest of the Mr. McMahon series to discuss with you even before that. So we've got podcasts coming out. We've had podcasts coming out every single day since Friday, covering every episode of Mr. McMahon. John and I, you know, speaking at length, I would say up, you know, from about like 50 minutes to an hour plus, speaking about a lot of the subjects contained within these, you know, which on the surface feel like episodes not necessarily containing anything new. But I think it's very easy to dismiss the importance of the series because of that, because what this is a megaphone for the world into a number of topics that have never received this sort of publicity before. And we at the very least discuss not just our thoughts on the topics themselves, but how good of a job this documentary does in conveying a lot of these very important topics to the wider world. So we already released one on Saturday covering episode 2, which was very much about the steroid scandal. Episode 3, of course, about the Montreal Screwjob. And episode 4, we just dropped today, talking about the fallout from Owen Hart's passing and what we felt was crucial information that was missing from this documentary.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed doing these dissections of the episodes with you and spending, you know, a whole episode, a whole podcast going through each episode. I've found it to be just interesting, just, you know, kind of revisiting these episodes over the past week Episode 5 will drop tomorrow for Post Wrestling Cafe members. That will be covering family business and a lot in regards to the Vince McMahon, Shane McMahon relationship and a lot of other dynamics within the family. And then Wednesday, we'll drop episode 6, which is The Finish. And that includes the handling of the Janelle Grant lawsuit, the kind of the legacy that Vince McMahon currently sits with, the fallout of this documentary, who comes off well, who comes off poorly, WWE's own image as it goes towards this big deal with Netflix. Personally, I feel these next two episodes, which Wei and I have recorded, I think they're the two best ones we have done of the series. I was very happy about these two shows that are coming your way. So those will be dropping Tuesday and Wednesday as the double shot on postwrestlingcafe.com. So your $6 gets you 30 days access right out of the gate. And yes, this week, a lot of stuff with the double shot, with Rewind Away, and then, of course, Rewind to SmackDown Friday and Collision Course. And a big month ahead. We're going to be doing multiple Rewind Aways. We're going to be tackling an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event from October of 1987. We're going to be doing Money in the Bank 2011, and we will also have cafe-exclusive shows covering Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, Royal Quest 4, and Wei and I will also get together for Ask Away, and we will continue the look at Agatha All Along that Rich Van and W.H. Park are navigating as we speak.
And Karen Peterson's actually working on something really exciting, yes, for Queen of Villains as well. So for those of you who have been watching the show, catching up, maybe you've gone through Mr. McMahon and are now looking for your wrestling fix via Netflix. A lot of people are catching a lot of buzz from Queen of Villains, and no better person to discuss the series than our own Karen Peterson. So expect that sometime next week. Just on the note of these Mr. McMahon podcasts, because at least some of you have asked whether or not you could listen to these without necessarily paying for a subscription. We are offering these, actually. Patreon has offered a new feature where you can pay a la carte for podcasts, and these are ones that we're putting up there. The minimum price that they're offering that they allow us to offer is $3. So if you just want to listen to one of these particular episodes, you can just pay $3 and you can go download that to your devices at postwrestlingcafe.com. So yeah, there you go. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
On to tonight's edition of Raw from the Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana. WrestleTix reporting 6,478. Going against two NFL games, much like they did last week. Wei, did you have any thoughts on the Seahawks-Lions, or were you focusing on the Titans-Dolphins tonight?
No, I wasn't focused on any of that.
Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett opened the show inside of the ring. And we go to a video recapping Jey Uso's title win last week, and we cut to Jey Uso in the concourse area with his son, who is there in Evansville. And then Jey just came to the ring, and we never saw his son again. He was just there, got some comp glasses from dad.
Jace, I believe.
Jace, yes.
Jace Uso.
Yeah, it's like Jey and Us combined.
Oh, okay, that's convenient.
I'm just making that up, but I just... don't like that. Yeah. By
he named his son after his worked wrestling name. Yes, before he even had that worked wrestling name. Yeah, no. Hey, latest member of the Bloodline made his debut on Raw tonight. So expect some follow up in about 10 years time from Young Jace. This was really cool. Like, I didn't think that they could make this Jey Uso entrance any cooler, and they've now like kind of turned him into like the children's champion. I mean, he's already the people's champion, but now they've got the kids that are now following him. This felt like a scene out of Rocky, where, you know, he's doing the big run through the city, and like it's the kids following him, trailing him. Just, they've done such a great job with this Jey Uso presentation.
He got into the ring and talked about how It was hard. This was a hard road to get to. His family made it hard for him, which I thought was like a veiled reference to his dad. But it, in storyline, he's explaining that Roman made it hard for him. And he said for
my
years,
my dad made it hard for me by criticizing my booking.
My dad's on Twitter. He says that for so long he has just been a twin, but now they know him and who he is. And his biggest fan is his mother. And his mother told him to go out there and show him who he was. And he got it and says, "Mama, we did it." This was the Rocky speech at the end. You know, there were these long pauses that I feel he was like genuinely getting like choked up here as he was delivering this this whole speech. Mm. And then he as he mentions his mom, Bron Breakker interrupts and he just walks out and he gets into the ring. He says he respects Jay. He was the better man and wanted to be the first one to congratulate him. And Jay is hesitant, but ends up shaking his hand. Jay is told, "I'm not going to spear you." And so Jay, after shaking his hand, Braun's about to leave, and Jay says, "Hey, Braun, there's some dogs here in Indiana." And we got to, we had confirmation there was at least one dog, because when they were doing the arrivals, Braun Strowman brought his dog to the arena.
Right, okay. I don't know what to... What you want me to say to that? Yes,
I'm just pointing out there was a dog in Indiana.
It sounded like there are a lot more than just one. John, didn't you hear the chorus of woof 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 woof? Didn't you hear that? If we ever go to a wrestling show, you're not attending as media, okay? You're just going there as a fan. Will you participate in the dog barking for Bron Breakker?
No. I would be questioning life choices if that's what it came to. Yeah, no, not at all.
So, you know, the big, maybe I would say news coming out of the segment is the fact that, like, this is a Bron Breakker following losing the championship, teasing a babyface turn. He came out here, did not feel the urge to attack his opponent, simply walked out of the arena. Now, at this point, you're thinking maybe this is just sort of a misdirect for a delayed swerve, but you're seeing the tease later on the show of him going for Gunther's championship, and it would make perfect sense why Braun would be a babyface. Also, it would make perfect sense why he was encouraging so much, you know, throughout his heel run, this sort of babyface response from the crowd. You know, where are my dogs at? Like, what kind of heel says that? Well, the type of heel that's about to turn babyface, which it looks like Bron Breakker is.
Yeah, Bron Breakker and DMX.
Oh, man, DMX never... prompt. Oh, okay, he said, "Where are my dogs at?" I don't think he prompted people to bark like this.
Not exactly. No, I think that's where the similarities probably end between.
Did they ever call him DMX? Did they ever call him? What did they call Bron Breakker? The badass. What sort of badass?
The unpredictable badass. Is that his nickname?
Yeah.
They might have just shortened it to the badass now.
Okay. So yeah, that was notable. It's also notable, again, just to, like, I think WWE does this so well, where like you have a big, big event ending the show, and then on the very next show, that's the first thing you see. They gave you a video recap of Jey Uso winning the championship. They give him in ring time to cut a promo to really cement the status, and the total effect of it is just, you know, who we should be focused on right now. You remember, you know, the big moment from last week, and now it just kind of makes you more excited to focus on this guy going forward. Jay's promo style is really unique, and it's unique in that it's Steve Austin's what style promo. The first I think of which since we've seen since Steve Austin do the same. It's not necessarily a promo style you could just choose to mimic. In his case, it came about somewhat organically, evolving from like the Usos back and forth call and response style. That never got over that well, you know, even when the two were doing it. But because Jay is so over now, this call and response has also become like one of the most infectious promo styles, I would say, on the show, and it's completely unique to him. It fits so well with this sort of like dynamic that he has as sort of the people's champ, the guy who walks through the crowd, the guy who uses the crowd to cut his own promos. So it's all coming together just so incredibly well for him.
And then this graphic came on the screen thanking all the members of the WWE Universe for making Mr. McMahon the number 4 series in Netflix. thank you for a huge opening week. and everyone gave a standing. No, oh, sorry, that didn't happen at all.
What are the streaming numbers for this? I wonder. You know, more people stream Mr. McMahon than blank.
Than this, and this combined.
Yeah,
that would have been.
Did you know?
It's of course, like, there was not going to be any mention of it, but it's just wild that it just feels like, granted, we're in like this bubble, but it just feels like everyone is talking about this series, and the one kind of reprieve from hearing people talk about Vince McMahon is this 3 hours of WWE programming.
It's like one of the most mainstream things the WWE has ever, I guess, been semi-attached to.
And this is going to be a huge series for Netflix. Like, it's probably going to, like, we're just talking like the first week where the people that are seeking it out, like, there's going to be a huge kind of ripple effect of this documentary that for a lot of people, that's going to be their understanding of WWE. It's through this series, and people that are just going to start it and watch it over time.
Especially if, like, any further news breaks about the Janelle Grant case or any of these other allegations, like, this now kind of becomes the most accessible, like, to some, maybe definitive, you know, a package of, like, it's essentially a Wikipedia page for not just, you know, Vince McMahon, but the WWE.
Yeah, the family section will now have once challenged his son to stab him in the heart for succession.
Okay, when I say earlier that, like, I think it's pretty notable the series even exists in the way that it does on Netflix, and that it's profiling up every story automatically, like, makes it an event. What I mean by that is my wife now knows about Rita Chatterton. My wife now knows about the Ring Boy scandal. And did you ever think that those sort of topics would, like, get this sort of publicity?
Never.
Of course. Yeah, it's amazing.
Did she start watching it on her own, or did she watch it with you?
I kind of forced her, and she didn't really have much interest beyond a few episodes.
I'd be horrified to watch this with my wife, and then this is the main power figure in this industry, and explaining scandal after scandal. Dominic and Liv are outside by the Mattel lowrider, and Dom gets a call from Finn Balor. Yo, Finn, you good, fam? And fam is not good. He is having travel problems, but he will see them soon. This was a very loud speaker that they had. We all got to hear Finn on the other end of the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rey Mysterio against Xavier Woods, set up last week. Rey hits this acai moonsault and is setting up Woods for the 619, but it's avoided. And then Woods goes to lift Rey, and he just collapses. And then they have this, like, exchange where Xavier reaches for his head and rips off the mask of Rey, but does it so it's an accident, but seizing the moment, capitalizes and rolls up Rey in 727 and gets the pin, and he's looking apologetic. Rey looks upset, and Woods is saying, "What was I supposed to do?" Which was a valid question in all of this. Xavier Woods watching his Arena Mexico, and got the Rudo victory here.
Mm-hmm. I thought the match was overall fine, you know, like for a Rey Mysterio match that, you know, which is usually flawless, maybe a couple spots that might have been just a little bit sloppy, but, like, not enough to, you know, derail the story or anything. And I actually thought the finish was actually a pretty creative and, like, interesting way to help carry along this heel turn. It's, you know, one of the most offensive things somebody can do to a luchador is to take their mask off. In fact, it's a DQ in Mexico, at least.
Yeah, don't send anyone to the WCW section of the network.
What? Oh, no.
Blow your mind with this guy.
Yeah, maybe that will make it over to Netflix, yeah. But, like, the finish carries enough plausible deniability to keep Woods' intentions vague. So I actually thought it was a very clever finish.
Deville and Baszler approach Lyra Valkyria, who will not have backup with Natalya and Zelina Vega off on promotional duties tonight. So she is left by herself. And Deville states, "Don't worry about Shayna. She won't bite unless I tell her to." Okay.
Where are my dogs at? Hold on a second. Is Shayna Baszler the vampire? Okay, are they referencing that?
Yeah, I guess she does bite without prompting from Sonya Deville.
Are they bringing her vampire gimmick back?
Perhaps.
It's part of the fusion. We're fusing shoot fighting with vampires.
Well, maybe we'll get a Halloween-themed episode. And much like John Cena got his character revival through the rap character at Halloween, maybe Shayna can do the same. She'll dress up as a vampire and just stick with it.
Okay. All right. Look forward to that. Bloodsport.
There was another Viking Raiders vignette that they're coming back. I guess this spells war. So, yes. Who will also be present on this Sakura Genesis card on Friday or on Thursday.
Right. War Machine. Yeah.
Yes, they were War Machine at the time. A name I don't expect them to return to on this run.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people are suspecting it's a return to the War Raiders name. You know, they do change.
Are we ready for that shift? I mean, the nostalgia Listen, is going to be through the roof.
They can anything they can use to as a fresh coat of paint is very welcome for the Viking Raiders, okay? Like, this is a team that has to battle, I think, a whole lot of just bad years now, bad creative. Like, to even call them a mid-card act, I think, would be kind. They are below that. They are the drumstick-eating...
carpool karaoke.
Golf playing, you know. What was that? What did they do? What was it? Crochet? Like, or croquet? What did they play?
Did they play croquet?
I don't know.
When they were doing all the mini Olympics with the Street Profits?
Yeah. Like, just the stench is still on them. Like, Ivar had a pretty good run, you know, as a singles. Like, he kind of had the Bronson Reed push for a time there with the moonsault and everything. But, you know, he got injured. And now this is, you know, hopefully they can, you know, under Levesque, maybe be treated a little bit more seriously.
Kofi is backstage with Xavier Woods and comes up and asks Woods, did you do that on purpose? And Woods denies it and says, I thought you would maybe want to congratulate me. And we can see Killer Cross or Karrion Kross looking on in the background. And Kofi says, yeah, well, Jay just offered me an IC title shot next week. And Woods seems kind of annoyed that, okay, Kofi, you're going to get another singles run. Great. And then Kofi interrupts and says, yeah, but then I told him you should get the shot. And Woods is so happy. He's pumped and he wants to be in Kingston's corner tonight when he faces Gable, and Kingston agrees because Woods is the QB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Kofi is such a nice guy.
He is. Who he does gave that? Up gave up a title shot just like that.
Yeah. And I really am enjoying the storyline. I'm always curious how you feel, John, because I feel like I was enjoying this maybe when most shouldn't have been enjoying it. So
you were day one on this storyline. I was not. I was more late to the party.
I saw the potential in it, even when they were doing stuff with Karrion Kross. I admit that stuff wasn't very good, but I liked the sort of bones of it. And now I think they are realizing it, realizing that potential. But how do you feel about it, President?
I mean, the story, it's gone through a lot of changes, and it's been on this very extended odyssey. But here we are, where they have now been able to latch into something that feels as though there's progress. You feel that there is a tension here, and week to week, I think you are invested in where this is ultimately going between two. I think people are now on board for what the payoff to this will be, and they're interested week to week, and they're giving you something each week. It's not just like, yes. I just felt they were going in circles for a lot of this, and mm-hmm. Now you're getting progress each week.
Agreed. Like, we're continuing to see these sort of layers of this heel Xavier Woods that are, you know, within him. And even in an instance like this where Woods, like the old Woods, would have, of course, like defended his actions for why he's innocent in accidentally taking Ray's mask off. Instead, he uses it as an opportunity to get mad at Kofi for not congratulating him on the big victory he has. So it's, you know, I think they're doing a good job of like creating this like persona of this very insecure little man who just feels like he, you know, he's got this complex of like not being enough in the New Day. Speaking of Karrion Kross, he was in the background here. Just to maybe take the credit for all of this. So the man continues to bat 1,000 in the WWE.
A lot of Karrion Kross on tonight's show by his standards. Lyra Valkyria against Zoe Stark, who had the PFC backing her up. There was a springboard missile drop kick by Stark after the commercial break. Tries for the Z360, but Lyra catches the leg, knocks DeVille off the apron, and goes for the roll-up, but Baszler's distracting the referee. So then DeVille gets back up, lands a knee strike on Lyra, and leads to the Z360 as Zoe gets the win in 7 minutes and 13 seconds. Lyra is outnumbered by the three, and then we get the return of Caden Carter and Katana Chance in a face mask, running down and fighting off the Pure Fusion Collective and delivering a keg stand to Baszler and DeVille. This face mask.
Mm-hmm. No heat for the match, nor Chance and Carter's return here, unfortunately. I would say creatively, I nothing all that inspired about any of this either. It just kind of felt like Chance and Carter are back. Let's just kind of like put them out there, check these boxes off, and then just kind of cut away. Like it felt very low effort, paint by numbers, this particular segment.
There's a good shot no one even knew this was Katana Chance with the face mask on.
Even with the face mask off, I have to ask how many people would know who these two are. It's not like I think they've just kind of ingrained themselves that well as characters. I would even suggest, like, even if they do know, if they knew who they were, would they have known that they were away because of an injury angle from PFC? I don't, or how many people would even care? Like, they've not really given us much reason to.
Backstage, Lyra thanks them so much for coming to save her. And Chance says, they're done being the nice guys. We're coming for the tag titles. Just like that. The Unholy Union, remember them? Isla Dawn and Elba Fire ask why they think they can cut the line. A very valid question. The titles belong to us. And they start arguing as Chance has to be held back. So I think they're trying to give much more of an edge here to Katana Chance.
Yeah.
She's trying to act
successful,
a little like off kilter here. Yeah, it was a home run.
Yeah, it's been a, like, I feel like it's been like,
I like
a
these
year.
Two as a team personally.
Oh, me
like,
too.
I think there's a lot more upside in Chance and Carter than some of these other teams, but yeah, we'll see where this goes. A lot of this just feels like slotting of just in the absence of any really developed characters or stories, we're just going to create groups, and that will allow us to get these people screen time at a time when we're going to see a lot of reduced screen time beginning next week for, you know, like tonight is an interesting exercise when you mm-hmm. look at this 3-hour show. Tell me like what you would cut out that would make up an hour that would not be represented on Raw. And this would probably fall into that category.
Yeah. We're essentially going to get the Hulu version of Raw as the main version every single week. So what
it's
makes
glorious.
The cut and what doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, there's it won't be this next segment, which was the Hell in a Cell being lowered to its own theme. And we have security who, I mean, how much security did they hire tonight between this and the main event? Adam Pearce promises one hell of a special attraction at Bad Blood. It will be a war, but this war ends on Saturday. And they say no physicality tonight, and everyone boos. So out walks God, adorned in white, followed by the devil in black.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Drew explains
I thought he was an atheist.
Punk or Drew?
Punk. Well, I don't know about Drew.
Well, he was all in white here. I thought normally you would think, oh, he's getting all bloody going into Saturday, but I think they're saving all the plasma for Atlanta. Drew explains he's wearing black, not because he respects Punk, but out of respect for his wife. Because after Saturday, she's going to have to feed you, bathe you. She's probably going to leave you. And the rest of the world will be celebrating when you're gone for good. And Drew cannot understand why the fans still chant for him, despite all the evidence that Drew has presented over the past 10 months. Mentions how Roxanne Perez saw the light after spending some time around this guy. He hates Punk, and Punk is the one that taught him how to hate. And he learned that hate is a powerful weapon, but all of that hatred will die on Saturday with CM Punk when he beats him. Punk gets the microphone. He has been called a lot of things, but tonight he is voiceless because he has nothing to say to a piece of garbage like Drew. However, he did have several minutes of dialogue to fill here, and thus he was not the voiceless. He has been living in a hotel for the last 4 weeks because he will not subject his wife to the man he has become as he prepares for Hell in a Cell. And he has become the boogeyman that his harshest critics accuse him of being. And he reminds Drew, you prayed for this. And on Saturday, when you're on your knees begging for mercy, I will wipe the blood away from your eyes. You will look up to me and you won't be praying to God. You won't be praying to the devil. You will be praying to CM Punk. I'll see you in hell. And he also mentions in passing here that he will be sending Drew back to Scotland in a box.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
This has been the one program where they have really hit it hard that we're going to kill each other.
Yeah, there's been some very, I would say, literal interpretation of the name of Hell in a Cell. So, you know, I think to me, at least some of this might possibly be a response to a lot of the criticisms surrounding the bracelet angle and how to some they maybe felt like that was kind of ridiculous that these grown men are fighting over like a bracelet that, you know, doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, I also just think it's because this is the third match. It's the Hell in a Cell. They're trying to be a lot more serious. You're not getting the punchline. You're not getting the ha-has, you know, that we've typically had with Drew's promo, certainly, and maybe some of Punk's promos as well. And I would say
they're also trying to resurrect what at one time was a huge drawing gimmick match for this company when they were on pay-per-view, and one that over years has been greatly lessened and had lost its effectiveness. And I think this program, this lead up, like they have made this feel like this is the most dangerous match in their arsenal when a feud reaches this point.
Yeah. I think they've tried their best. Now, it's hard to convince me because I know this is at this point like a 2024 WWE Hell in a Cell. And because I guess the last so many have lacked blood, with the exception of, I guess, that Edge one was a cage match, not a Hell in a Cell match, right?
I think you're definitely getting blood in this one. Like they promised it.
Well, that's the name of the pay-per-view, John. It's Bad Blood, the one night of the year where we can allow real blood. I don't know. No, but I just mean, like, I think, like, we've just kind of built up, like, years of the Hell in a Cell feeling more like a sanitized, you know, version of what was maybe, you know, in the Foley Taker era. So they have to do a lot more work.
God, we're not going to have that red cell, are we?
I hope not. I don't think that's Levesque's taste, you know, like you see War Games, you know what that looks like, right? So I get the sense he's much more of a classic, you know, cell structure guy. Yeah.
Really good segment here. I thought it was great. I think they've done a tremendous job in the lead up to this match for Saturday. Like it feels to me like the main event.
That's apparently still up for debate.
I think right up until this week, like I don't think it's as big of an issue as some make it, like what goes on last, but it's more so, I think people just assign that it's the match that is treated by the company as like the match that sold the show. And realistically, I think both this and the Atlanta brothers are, you know, huge contributing factors to like this show that has done like it's incredible what these prices are going for on the secondary market for this show.
Did like they priced them too low, I guess, is now the question. I'm
Mark
sure they're
Shapiro
asking
is fuming.
Yeah.
Under monetization, the margins, the goddamn margins. Kathy Kelly is with Braun Strowman and said, quote, "We've got the last Monster Standing match coming up in a couple of minutes." This was like 10 minutes into hour two. In a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Many minutes. She asks him if there's any trepidation going into this match. Braun explains, "I don't know what trepidation means, but he will be the last Monster Standing." The Miz enters and gets interrupted by the returning R-Truth, and who has blanked out the five tsunamis he took. Braun has to go prepare for this match. Truth says, "You know, I don't like Karrion Kross picking on you," and he got them a match tonight with AOP, and Miz has to explain who AOP is, the Authors of Pain, and Truth asks what books they've written, and we go to commercial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Truth is back. Cody Rhodes is going to be on Pat McAfee on Wednesday.
Cody Rhodes. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Cody, great, great job on that doc. Tell us about when you did that interview, that sit down. You know, I once had Vince in this studio.
Yeah, your Pat McAfee sounds a little bit like a Vince.
Yeah,
gravelly voice.
I guess so. I've never done Pat before, so give me some time. Then Sami Zayn is interviewed in the back. The disrespect from Gunther really bothers him. He knows that he is just as good as Gunther and good enough to become world champion, and he won't go away easily. And he won't stop until he gets his title match with Gunther. Six-man tag, Dominic Mysterio, JD McDonagh, and Carlito against Dragon Lee, Cruz del Toro, and Joaquin Wilde. Lee got the hot tag, was looking good for a couple of minutes here for Dragon Lee's like one match he gets every quarter. And then after a springboard dive by Joaquin, we had Lee and Del Toro with follow-ups. Liv Morgan distracts as Travel Woe Finn Balor shows up, knocking Wilde off the top, snaps his throat into a suplex, and JD pins Joaquin Wilde in 7 minutes and 6 seconds. And the Judgment Day all celebrate in the ring. We go to break, we come back, and they're still in this like group hug. I can't imagine what this commercial break was like for the crowd at the Ford Center, but we come back. And Balor now addresses Damian Priest, says, "You can't rip my heart out like you threatened because I don't have one." And he's going to prove that Priest is the one who needed them, not vice versa. Liv Morgan, meanwhile, is going to prove at Bad Blood that she is a, quote, home-wrecking, man-stealing, heartbreaking, title-taking, greatest woman's champion of all time. The new Ric Flair. Ripley comes out. And because she was with Dominic for so long, she knows all of his dirty secrets. The dirtiest one, kids, if you need to step out of the room, do so. He was claustrophobic and states, "When you're in the cage on Saturday, soiling yourself and cleaning yourself with your new merch." Because, yes, WWE, the pioneers of merchandise, have now released Dominic Mysterio toilet paper.
Yeah, and for how much, John?
I don't know how much it is. I'm going to guess no less than $15.
Okay. Well, the price is right for you. Wrong, actually, for you, John.
Oh,
because
higher or lower?
It is only one roll of toilet paper, $12.99, John.
U.S. Okay.
Yes. So,
well, it's over $15 Canadian.
What a steal. In some
dirty Dom. I'm sorry. If you buy this, I don't respect you.
But John, you get 25% off your purchase if you use code Superstar right now. So, you know, it could only, I don't know, be like $10. Yeah. I don't know. For people who purchase this, I mean, obviously it's a novelty item, but man, what, yeah, like, would you use this? Would you only use this on a special occasion?
What is a special occasion?
I don't know. Like you went out, like, I don't know, an anniversary maybe, like, let's use the fancy toilet paper tonight. I'm not really sure.
We just went to that Michelin restaurant. Only one way to withdraw.
Yeah.
Bring out the Dom paper. So the Priest then pops up in the ring. And he attacks Balor. Rhea gets into it with Liv. We get Dominic thrown into the cage, but then Liv returns. At some point, Dom is thrown into the cage, and then Priest is finally hit with a, quote, slingshot, which was the sling blade, and he is outnumbered. They hit him with 3 coup de grâces with Balor, and that's our segment setting up the 2 matches for Bad Blood. I can't say, after all this time, like, we did the breakup all the way back at SummerSlam, I cannot say this Priest-Balor match feels as though it's one that is like this big culmination of these brothers, former brothers, that are going to come to blows on Saturday. We'll see how the match turns out, but fine segment, but nothing that was truly memorable.
In terms of heat, like, it's definitely playing second to Liv versus Rhea, which continues to receive really great responses. Just even in the earlier promos between Liv and Damian, you could kind of see the audience's attention and a lot more reaction for the Liv Morgan promo. I thought it was a fine go home segment, not the peak of the build, but I think by this point it doesn't necessarily need to be. I like the introduction of Dominic's claustrophobia as, you know, a main sort of like draw for this Shark Cage match. Dom selling for it when he was being threatened to put by Rhea putting him into it, I thought was really strong as well. So I'm excited for that match. It's going to be one of the louder responses of the entire evening.
We had a Sheamus video reflecting on being hit by a bat. And the only thing worse than being hit by a bat is being hit by a bat from a man who I still call Butch. And he's going to knock some sense into the loser weight. And he's going to be on the wrong side of a fight night. And he calls Butch a dangerous little bastard and tells him to bring all of his weapons for a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match. Now, I could have sworn in this, he said this was going to take place across the pond, which I guess St. Louis is across some pond, just right. Not the more figurative ocean.
Right. Honestly, I wasn't listening closely enough to be able to say one way or another. I mean, it's not possible for them to have this match in Europe, is it?
Like, they announced it for next week, and next week is right. Not going to be in Europe. So
gotcha.
That answered that. Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away. First up, it's Sakura Genesis 2017 as New Japan presents a sold-out show from Sumo Hall, headlined by Kazuchika Okada against Katsuyori Shibata. Then it's on to 1988 with an episode of WWF's Saturday Night's Main Event on NBC as the Mega Powers begin to explode. And we'll wrap up the month with Money in the Bank 2011 as CM Punk challenges John Cena in Chicago weeks after the pipe bomb promo. Also coming up this month, we will have reviews of TNA Bound for Glory, New Japan's King of Pro Wrestling, and Royal Quest 4, while Rich Van and WH Park continue their navigation of Agatha All Along. Plus, Ask Away, Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course, ad-free shows, audio updates, and so much more. It can all be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door for 30 days access to all of this and more. Tessitore and Wade Barrett, they gave their condolences to Pete Rose and showed a graphic. Then there was Damage Control, who beat the Unholy Union last week. They are challenging Cargill and Belair for a title match, and Sky says she's already in Belair's head and will continue to live there rent-free, and they are still adamant. They are the most dominant force in the history of this division.
I think Io's setting a lot more comfortable with her English promos. It's been like interesting seeing her continued progression week to week, like since the start of this particular cycle. And I wonder if Dakota Kai was still around, whether or not we get this opportunity. But clearly, they feel confident enough in letting her and now Kairi speak a bit more in English. I think Io especially is like doing a really good job of like, you know, occasionally throwing in some Japanese in there just to maybe convey some extra emotion. I think she sounds pretty good doing it. And overall, like, I'm sure these are just really great for practice, you know, like for getting them a lot more comfortable speaking English on camera, because in the years that they've been in this company, it's got to be really hard to get better when you aren't given opportunities to speak. So I'm happy to, you know, start to see this for them.
Yeah, I think Io has really broken out over these last couple of weeks with, in particular, the singles match with Bianca Belair. And I think it is a bit of a light on people is that, yeah, you're trying to establish this division and there's reasons for it, but you have, you know, just in Io and Bianca Belair, like these two incredible talents that haven't been showcased as much in these tag team presentations. Chad Gable is with American Made taking on Kofi Kingston, who has Woods in his corner, and they are trading covers back and forth. Kingston stops a Chaos Theory and hits a crucifix, and then Gable has to use just the all of his power to bridge from underneath, and he managed to do it, and he comes up and he's got a cut on his forehead. Then Gable is trying for the ankle lock. Trouble in Paradise gets caught for another ankle lock attempt, and then Kingston hits the SOS. Gable grabs the rope, and then as Kingston leaps off the steps, he takes out all of American Made. Woods takes down Julius, and then Ivy Nile tries to distract, and Woods, doing the road dog spot here when he was with Jeff Jarrett, grabs the leg of Chad Gable right as Kingston is trying for the Trouble in Paradise, and this ends up screwing Kofi Kingston, because Gable hits the Chaos Theory and wins in 9-16, and Woods is beside himself for this screw-up. The QB fumbled, and he apologizes to Kofi, and Kofi has just about had enough of this guy. He's ready for the old quarterback to come back into the game.
What, which is Big E? Or Odyssey Jones?
Or himself.
Oh, gotcha. Yes, yes.
You know what, Woods? I forgive you. I'm taking that title match next week. You really fucked things up tonight, okay?
I thought the match was really good for the time that we had it. You know, there's a really fun clash of styles between the two here, and I quite enjoyed it. The finish, again, I thought was a really creative way of showcasing this, like, Xavier Woods character. He is extremely flawed, somebody who, again, is very insecure, and I was trying to overcompensate that by... I don't know, just doing shit like this, cheating now, and failing at doing it.
Screwing
up at it, yeah. I thought the spot might have looked a little confusing to a live audience because they didn't necessarily react to it because maybe things happened so fast. Like, for us, it wasn't confusing because we had Joe Tessitore filling the gap and explaining exactly what happened. But overall, I thought it was a very successful idea.
Yeah, Xavier Woods is getting more subtle now than we had seen him in previous incarnations.
Right. Yes. Yes, he certainly is. Mm-hmm.
They showed Seth Rollins at the Ravens-Bills game on Sunday, and a hint of what was to come. Redman is with Bronson Reed and asks about if he's worried about Seth Rollins returning. He was not worried. He said, "I took months off his career. Next time, I'll take years off his life." And he has exposed Braun for the man that he is, because I will be the last monster standing. Wyatt 6 video, anger festering into rage. Do not go down this path, which I chose not to. It ends in your demise. You know better. Do not force our hand. Heed our admonition. And we had a QR code that took us to another website, and I was not going down this rabbit hole again. I learned my lesson last week, so they're upset. Someone will be the new target, and they will come back. I appreciate all the work that goes into this, but I am just like... I'm not tuning into the show to do more homework.
Well, like, if you are entertained by it, I mean, listen, I'm not.
I'll be honest. Like, I don't find these to be all that. Like, I don't sense that these are this big buzzworthy aspects of the show that all these people are comparing their notes and their hints and what this is setting up. Like, I don't feel they have any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like I'm the target for this sort of thing. And I didn't even bother to take my phone out to scan the QR code this time. It's like, I haven't heard any buzz about these. Like, nobody's really kind of diving in to, like, solve the mystery. And I don't know. Again,
it's all riddles. And I honestly believe, like, if you went to the website, if you are somebody that's getting your phone out and you're going through all these different hurdles, I think, like, you should be rewarded with, like, you get some, like, clear storyline piece to this puzzle, that, like, there is a reward for doing this. This is just an endless loop of just, like, riddles and
clues for the sake of clues. I mean, I'm sure there's something at the end of it, but I don't know. They've kind of conveyed that you don't need to do all this, and we'll find out when we find out. Right. Like, I feel like if there was anything conclusive about any of these, we would have heard about it by now from anybody. And no one's even really talking about them. So somebody's to come. Continue to speculate about who that might be.
Well, it's not Gunther at the end of these videos, because he comes out for another Gunther segment. And we got highlights of the house show match he had with Ilya Dragunov on the weekend in Columbus, Georgia. And they state that Ilya has torn his ACL and should be out for 6 to 9 months, as they show him limping to the back. So there was no news of this over the weekend. I had not heard about him, like, limping to the back. This was obviously in plain sight of everyone here. But, I mean, it sounds legit, and that's a terrible setback for him. Like, a torn ACL, that's... They're really unfortunate, and would mean obviously surgery.
Yeah, 6 to 9 months is, man, that's brutal, you know? And it seems like he'll probably miss WrestleMania at this rate.
Yeah.
Like, though, I don't know if he would have, you know, figured into WrestleMania plans, but still, you know, like something it would have probably been there for him. And it's also 6 to 9 months of development that I think he really needs right now. Mm-hmm. So, very unfortunate. Hopefully he can come back with, you know, extra attention.
Gunther explains that life as champion is great, but something I hate about my life is the insults I have to deal with from Sami Zayn weekly. I could not ask for anyone more annoying than Sami. So out comes the annoyance, and he can end this by giving him a title match. Why won't you do it? And Gunther explains, you are not on my level. Zayn brings up WrestleMania and Gunther being scared that it will happen again. He says, Gunther, you're a coward. Gunther says, I'm not afraid of you. I'm afraid for my reputation. Had I lost my title to a better man, that would have been one thing. But losing to you is the most embarrassing moment of my career. I was so confident I would beat you. I, too, flew my family into WrestleMania, but I didn't publicize it like you did, and I had to go to the back after that match and speak to my father. And he verbatim reiterated this conversation between Gunther Sr. and Gunther. And his father basically said, I flew all the way from Vienna to see you lose to some bum. And says, Zayn, your family is used to seeing you fail, but my family expects everything from me. I am the golden goose of my family. I am special, something you never will be, world champion. And Zayn, he says, I may fail a lot, but I always pick myself up. But Gunther, when you failed, you crumbled. You never asked for a rematch. You left television for months, all because your dad made you feel like a loser. Now you're showing your dad that you're also a coward. So this is it. He has stepped over the line, and Gunther attacks Zayn, who fights back, hits an exploder, but then runs for the Huluva, is caught in the sleeper, and hit with a powerbomb. And all this in the man's loafers, which put those on WWE Shop, okay? Next to the toilet paper. This man is doing all this in loafers. Gunther then agrees to give Sammy his match, and Zayn smiles because he finally has cracked the code. And this will happen next Monday on Raw. Fantastic segment.
Excellent. Yeah, best in-ring promo segment of the evening, in my opinion. Both of these two have been...
The Golden Goose, Gunther. Yeah. Oh, it's got alliteration. I love it.
Yeah.
Triple G, okay? Step aside, Golovkin. Golden Goose, Gunther.
Just the thought of, like, Gunther... Gunther's upbringing and what his parenting consisted of is fascinating.
Imagine they did a recreation of this yes. conversation. Like they had like a security footage of father and son at WrestleMania.
I need some sort of dramatization of young Gunther and how what his upbringing was like to create the machine that we see today. So very good work here from the both of them. Honestly, Sami Zayn is at his best when he can be profiled against somebody who's just this incredible obstacle like Gunther. I don't think he's winning next week, but I'm curious to know what they kind of springboard Zayn into coming off of this.
Awesome Truth against AOP. This was more so an angle. They just beat down on R-Truth, who finally fought off Akam and Rezar, made the tag to Miz, and Miz gets in and just... boots are truth, and this was a kick that, I mean, any K1 level kickboxer would have looked at this kick and been like, wow, why is he doing pro wrestling? This is a kickboxer, if ever there was one. Miz just attacks him. The crowd was like livid here at this turn, and Karrion Kross is laughing on the floor as Miz walks out on Truth and tears off the Awesome Truth shirt, and they hit him with What a Rush and pin our truth. And that finally, we're going to get the mega powers exploding here. Miz versus R-Truth.
They've been teasing this Miz turn for a very long time. I didn't sense that much engagement from the crowd in response to this. I mean, they
booed when he did attack Truth. It wasn't. This wasn't tore the house down with shock, but They made noise.
I guess for me, like, because it's been so long and they've been teasing it for a long time, and because at one time, not that long ago, R-Truth was really, really popular on this show. By the time this finally happened, it didn't feel that big to me. You also had Tessa Torin Barrett just move on from this, like they didn't think it was a huge deal either. So, whatever. Let's see. You know, Karrion Kross, again, the guy is on a roll. Look, like he won the feud with Woods. He clearly was right about The Miz. He, according to him, caused AJ Styles to turn heel. He caused Rey Mysterio to, lose something. You know, he was bragging about everything, and he just continues
the mean streak in Shinsuke Nakamura that he planted.
He was responsible for everything, yeah.
Yeah, he also seems to have a pattern of instilling this in guys that, like, disappear from TV. Kelly is with Gunther and Kaiser. The match will happen next week with Sami Zayn, and Bron Breakker walks in because he just wants to take a look at Gunther's title. And Gunther remarks, "You are a badass." Bron says, "You'll find out soon enough." So we are doing the I lost the IC title and I am graduating program with Braun here.
Yeah. So Gunther versus
Braun.
He
too is not asking for a rematch for the IC title either. He's moving on.
You know, feels kind of early, honestly, for Bron Breakker to be challenging for the world championship and possibly winning or even failing for it. But it'll certainly be a pretty big match.
Next week, Gunther, Sammy, Sheamus and Pete Dunne, or Butch, and Jey Uso against Xavier Woods for the IC title. The main event is the last Monster Standing match, and Braun was barely standing by the midway point of this match.
What happened?
So, I mean, this guy has not been like moving at a pretty crisp state for a while, but tonight, I mean, the big spot before they go to commercial is Braun chokeslams Bronson through the desk, and we go to commercial, come back, and Strowman is being suplexed, and then he gets up. He cannot put any weight on this leg, and the next spot requires him to run the ropes and knock Bronson off the edge of the apron. You have never seen a man struggle so hard to run than this moment with Braun Strowman. I thought this guy was seriously not going to make it to the end of this match. They had like 17 minutes to go. It's like, this guy is not going to make it. He might be just like cannot stand and gutted his way through. I don't know if there was a specific injury. I don't know if you've watched him like doing the running around the ring spot, like he does not seem like his knees are great to begin with, but this was another level.
Even at the start of the match, I mean, he wasn't hobbling on it, certainly.
No, like, not to this degree. So maybe something happened during the commercial, because as we go to commercial, like, he's standing tall after the chokeslam spot, and then we come back, and this guy has one leg to work with. But it was just, it just seemed like not a fun exhibition here for Braun Strowman. So they fight up towards the entrance area. They... this is after Bronson takes the bump off the apron through a series of chairs, and then they fight by the equipment box, and Bronson stops Braun and hits him with a DVD off the equipment through a bunch of tables that are set up. They make their way back to the ringside area, and this is where Reed tackles Braun through the barricade, and we took out a row of fans in the front row who are attended to. Yes.
Yeah, we can say fans in quotation marks, because one of them had an awesome Truth shirt on, and you know no real fan is buying one of those.
Okay, because I saw one who also had like was covered in Dominic toilet paper
as well.
As a toga.
Well, that was a real guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So Reed hits the tsunami, but the referee is dealing with the fallen fans and the awesome Truth connoisseur. So Reed hits a second tsunami. Then Reed starts going after security, and Pierce gets in his face. So Pierce is grabbed by Bronson, and he's warning him. And we got Reed with Pierce, and they're swarmed by like 10 security guards. So Braun climbs to the top with his questionable leg and dives off the top for a high cross for the big domino spot where everybody crumbles to the floor. They were going for the visuals in this match, I will say that. They managed to get up and beat the count, and Strowman goes to climb the turnbuckle again, is hit with a chair, and as I guess many predicted last week, they in fact did do the superplex spot, breaking the ring. And as Reed is trying to get to his feet, he is hunched over the steps, and you see this figure running down the aisle, and there is Seth Rollins to stomp Reed on the steps, and Braun gets to his feet first to become the last monster standing by the loosest of definitions for this guy, who God knows what state he was in by the end of this.
Yeah, I thought this was excellent. A lot of expectations going into what this is, what feels like it's the final match of this incredible run. So much credit to Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman, and the entire team of producers and coordinators who have helped them put these great displays of stunts together in these sort of matches. I would go as far as to say this might be, like, if we can classify, you know, feuds set for pay-per-views and feuds clearly set for TV, this might be my favorite TV feud of the year. I think the creativity and effort that they put into all of these, like, live stunts has been very impressive and really showcases some, like, the type of production that you might only expect from the WWE. In this one, I love the way that they brought all the security and staff around the ring due to the Awesome Truth fan's injury, and that amazing high cross from Strowman, followed by the ring break, which, you know, unfortunately wasn't like the complete collapse that we've seen in the past, but still, like, very visually impressive regardless. And in fact, maybe feels, I don't know, that much more realistic, because, well, like, how's a ring supposed to break the same every single time? So yeah, the story finishes you know, with I think paths for the both of them. We obviously have Seth Rollins versus Bronson Reed coming up next, but by giving Strowman the win, even in this fashion, he comes out of this feeling very hot too. And I don't know if that was always the plan at the beginning
his
of
path
this.
Was to medical after this one. That I think was his path after.
Yeah, we'll see if they could follow up. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the spectacle that they promised, and they kind of just did all the big stunts that they could come up with. I mean, for these guys to go the length that they did, you know, it was just your total two behemoths that can do all of these insane stunts to varying degrees. And I think, yeah, I feel like this was the program that you looked at the beginning as being, you know, something quick for Bronson Reed to just pick up the win, and they stretched this for well over a month, and I think it was something of you know, great benefit for Braun Strowman. This was not just a program for Bronson Reed, who himself, like, moves well up the food chain after this feud, even in a loss, to work with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Braun has exceeded my expectations just as, like, through his commitment to all of these, like, really crazy spots. And if he is injured, the fact that he managed to finish the match, as much as we might just, you know, criticize that at some points, I think this is going to be one of those instances that, like, they might even promote as, like, you know, look, like, this guy had to battle whatever injury he had to battle and, like, still managed to win the match. You know, that's something they can actually celebrate and use to building him. So I also thought Joe Tessitore did a really good job in this match. You know, he did a great job in conveying.
When Braun came off the top for the domino spot, he screams, "Oh, the humanity!" Like, this guy is just, like, I'm sure he's having a great time doing this, but it was just, like, so bizarre when you're hearing, like, this ESPN voice, and I mean, he's fully, like, leaning into it.
I think he's done a good job of, at least in this match, and maybe throughout the rest of the show too, you know, in conveying that excitement and that emphasis needed for certain big spots like that to make them feel that much bigger. And again, for somebody who's been doing this for such a brief period of time, he's progressing really well.
He's a month into this, and I think amazing. Overall, like, he is. I still feel like it's not second nature for him to identify some of these moves. Like, that is still a glaring part of some calls. But, like, obviously, like, the fandom is there. He's got a passion for it. And I think overall, he's not offensive, which is half the battle for a new voice for 3 hours on a Monday night, that you are comfortable with that voice. And I think he has acclimated well 1 month into this project or experiment. So there you go. That was Raw. And setting up a fairly big show next week in St. Louis, which, again, the main event is, the fact is that the main event will be going into the ring at 9:45. Okay, that's the main event of Raw next week. I cannot wait. Let us go to Super Chats and feedback for tonight's show from Evansville, Indiana.
Got a Super Chat here from Owen York, who sends two pounds. To say Triple H has the same staff, how much healthier is the WWE?
I don't know what the question is.
I'm guessing this is in reference to the McMahon documentary and the fact that Vince is gone, but Owen is suggesting that a lot of the staff is there. How much healthier culturally, I'm assuming, is what I know there's a character limit, you know, for the 2 pound super chat. So maybe that I'm just inferring maybe that.
I mean, Paul Levesque has kind of cultivated his own crew from NXT up through now. There is a lot of crossover of people that were working with the prior regime, but also a lot of people that, Heyman is in a very prominent role. You had Jeremy Borash, that is, working on that, the shoot at Georgia Tech and such. Jeremy Borash was very much recruited through Paul Levesque's team that he was assembling there in Florida. What was one of the first moves when Levesque was put into power? It's got William Regal back. He's got his team there. But if you want to expand on the question,
If you're referring to maybe past allegations and just treatment of women within the roster, it's really, really hard to be able to say. It's hard to be able to say what exactly is the same staff, you know? So again, we're trying to infer all of this from 7 words. Okay. So thank you very much though for the super chat. Anyway, we go to Karthik, who sends 40 rupees to say, is this WWE boom close to coming to an end?
I don't think so. I mean, you can look at, some of they've been on this wave of attendance, and when you look at the next couple of months, they're still very healthy. They're not at it's not this immediate every TV is selling out, but I wouldn't even worry about that because we're going into this Netflix promotion, and I can't tell you what that is going to mean for the product, but I think it's going to be a big boost, plus the combination of WrestleMania season, John Cena coming back, in theory, The Rock for something for Mania. So whatever, even if there is a short dip as we go towards the end of the year, I think January hits, they're going to have a massive promotion. I think that is one where the Netflix WWE promotional machine will be in order, and I feel like they're going to be red hot going into 2025, and how this Cena retirement clicks with people that could be a huge benefit all year long that they have of this countdown that is this overarching story of the year, plus just your regular week to week characters and stories. So I think they're in a very healthy spot, and I don't see the bottom falling out. Everything goes up and down, and you don't ride this wave forever, but I think they feel like they have cushioned this to bleed into the new year, and they could have a huge 2025.
If we're maybe strictly using financials as a barometer of success, I almost feel like this TKO regime is only scratching the surface of what their machine will be able to do with
That level. We're just it's guaranteed so much of this that it's just they're the financial level is going to stay here. Mm-hmm. You might get ebbs and flows with attendance, and that's a good barometer of popularity, but they're not living and dying based on live event ticket sales. It's obviously preferred to have full crowds and energetic crowds, but I mean, this is they could just torpedo creatively, and they could still have their biggest revenue year ever next year. That's where it is, and to a degree, AEW as well. You can, again, their attendance, you can scrutinize that. But it's whether they are drawing 3,000 people for a Dynamite or 7,000 at a Dynamite, that they're not living and dying by that either. But of course, these are indicators of your popularity with the public, and especially those that are opting to go spend money on your product and leave your home to go enjoy your product.
Let's go up next to forum.postwrestling.com, where all of our Patreon patrons can leave their feedback for every one of our shows.
Muggins starts us off. Let me start by saying I'm going to miss Ilya Dragunov so much. He's out for at least 6 months. If there's a silver lining, he's got a program with Gunther waiting for him. Braun Breaker is heading to babyface land. I was skeptical at first because I thought he would spear Jay out of his shoes, but that run-in with Gunther cemented that he's primed to stay the course going forward. New Day is fracturing, and the monster mash in the main event was a blast, capped off with Seth Rollins' return. I also dug that Drew and Punk wore opposing colors during the final go-home promo for Bad Blood. They're so zoned in. A dope ending to the three-hour era for now. Next week looks loaded.
All right. All right, let's go up next to Brian, who says, well, takes us to, okay, so he's taking a victory lap for calling the ring-breaking spot. He says, I can't say I didn't see it coming. However, I thought Seth Rollins returning to stomp Reed's head into the steps was the right way for Reed to lose this. Picking up that feud from months ago, fun and memorable main event, a whole section of the front row being planted was something. Punk and Drew looked like they were getting dressed for two very different horror movies in one last good promo for their match. Miz gunning for the Big Show record of most turns pales in comparison to the story they're telling with Xavier Woods. Had Raw returned to 2 hours this week instead of next week, we could have been spared that. I'm still on board with Priest and Ripley versus Judgment Day. On a side note, thank you guys for the Mr. McMahon reviews. I would much rather listen to these unbiased, well-researched podcasts than watch the actual series.
All right. Well, thanks for checking them out, Brian. We appreciate it. And again, episode 5 and 6 will be dropping Tuesday and Wednesday, postwrestlingcafe.com. I think they're really strong shows that we have to close out the series. Last word of the night from Benjamin. To quote commentary, look at he's looking at the steel, touching it. I don't know what that is in reference to or context, but I will take Benjamin's direct translation or transcription of that. And there was much more. I'm really hoping there's some great erotic fanfic being written about the Punk Drew McIntyre rivalry. I'm sure there is. Love their segment. Love the wardrobe differentiation, the black hat versus white hat. I just wish they let the segment breathe a bit more before cutting to comedy. What was the comedy in that segment? To kill each other.
I just wish they let the... Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe sure. The segment that followed this was...
Oh, like, got
maybe
it.
Maybe that's
right.
What he's referring to.
Okay.
Chance and Carter getting a tougher tooth in their backstage promo was more like watching Care Bears get mad in a Starbucks line. I think this is what was following it. I hope they find their way into something better. Also, thank you for the coverage of the McMahon documentaries. Your coverage means some of us don't have to watch and be directly offended by him. Okay, well, whatever works for you, Benjamin. Thank you very much for checking out those shows. So there you have it, everyone.
A couple more super chats here before we sign off. Yeah, I think Owen is looking to maybe emphasize what he was saying. He sends £5. Thank you for that support, Owen. He says, do you think that Triple H has shown enough character to suggest that he has learned from those mistakes rather than survived them? And those mistakes, I'm assuming, in relation to Vince McMahon. Like, I'm not trying to get you to send another super chat, Owen, but it's still kind of vague what you're specifically referring to. But okay, let's just assume he's asking about, like, maybe the cultural, like, sort of problems to do with the WWE. Or is he talking about booking?
I'm sorry. I don't.
Sorry,
like, those are two widely different topics. Let me go in this route. If you want to look at like problems in the company that existed, we really can't speak to that because it's not as though, like, what have we had? We had Shawn Michaels on a conference call stating that they had introduced new policies, but then they never did produce those policies, even though that was offered up. And in terms of, like, since January, Brandon and I did report on the fact that there is, you know, specifics about consensual relationships and, you know, actual, like, wording as such for protocols that go on in the company. But beyond that, it's not like this has been super transparent when it comes to, like, just the basic question of, like, if there was another incident involving someone in a position of power with someone working underneath them, like, what is the process? Like, this is still an industry where it is very, it's like, are there those same avenues to go to people so that there is not some figure that controls so much power that this is not going to be something that is tolerated anymore? Like, they have not gone above and beyond, I think, to address, like, hey, these are the problems of the past. This is what the new era is doing, and we're going to be transparent in public about the changes so that this never happens again.
Right. Yeah.
And he's probably asking about booking.
Well,
I
to that end,
why there's a roof on War Games. Or not a roof.
I mean, to that, like, maybe assuming that's the question, I feel like we've seen enough evidence to suggest that there's that Hunter is very aware of like Vince's shortcomings as a booker, and I don't think he's made, with the exception of, like, I'm gonna say what is it, this Andrade Melo program that seems to be endless, like, that feels very much something like that Vince would book, this sort of endless best of X, you know, like feud that just continues to go on. And other weaknesses, you know, nobody's perfect, he's certainly not, but it's much improved from the booking before, assuming that's what you're asking about, Owen. All right,
hopefully we covered the gamut.
Oh, okay. So he clarifies by sending another 2-pound super chat, trying to talk about culture. Sorry. Thank you. Okay.
Let's not shake Owen for any more pounds. So thank you.
Yeah. What culture? What culture are you speaking of specifically, and not the website, I guess. Thank you, Owen, for your very generous support at this point. We also got Kyle E. Coyote, who simply sends $5. I'm assuming this was for a super sticker. We can't see those in StreamYard, but thank you for the support anyway, Kyle E. Coyote. No question even.
All right. Well, those are the easiest ones. Okay, that's it. We're at the finish line. Back tomorrow with a review of episode 5, Family Business, of the McMahon, the Mr. McMahon series, and then episode 6 review on Wednesday. We've got Pollock and Thurston back at its normal time of 1 Eastern this Wednesday, followed by Rewind to Dynamite on Wednesday night after the 5th anniversary show. And give Brandon and Davey a listen on Tuesday, the CW debut, or as we call it in Canada, another week where Sportsnet 360 airs it at 11 p.m. Eastern time. Only for a few more months.
And we're then on Netflix after that.
Everything moves to Netflix for for Canadians. All right, that's it. Thanks to everyone for listening, watching. We'll speak with you as soon as you refresh your podcast app. You'll have another show from us. Goodbye.